The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WISO. Back in 2002, I did my only interview with a gynecologist from Manhattan. Her name is Dr. Hilda Hutcherson, and she had written a book that was a bestseller called What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. Let's listen.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. She has a book out called What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. Good afternoon, Hilda.
Hi, Vic.
Hilda, I'm surprised that you wrote this book. I read it, and I said, wow, this is a real eye-opener. Why did you write this?
Well, I've been a gynecologist for 21 years. And I just noticed that women have a lot of questions about sex. I mean, and sometimes it's very, very basic questions about their bodies and their sexuality that you think that everyone would have the answers to. And those questions just haven't changed over 21 years, the same questions over and over. And so I decided that there was a need for a book that was educational, that answers the questions that most women have but are too embarrassed to ask their doctors or their partners or their good girlfriends about. And so that's why I came up with this book.
And this book is written primarily for women, right?
It's primarily for women, but I can tell you that men have enjoyed it just as much. I have received so many flowers from men, usually husbands, who have been so pleased with the way that their wives have responded after reading my book that they've sent me flowers just to say thank you.
Wow. That's a wonderful fringe benefit.
Yeah, so guys like it too.
What's the deal? Is it really that tough for mothers to talk to their daughters?
It's very tough for mothers to talk to their daughters about sex. And I think the main problem is that talking openly about sex is still rather taboo in this country. And since most of us who are mothers had mothers that didn't talk to us openly and honestly about sex, it's very difficult for us to do the same. We often don't know where to start. And many of us feel that we don't know enough ourselves to feel secure enough to talk to our daughters and give them the information that they need.
You begin the book in your preface by talking about your wedding night, your honeymoon, and that experience, and reflecting back upon your own experience with your own mother.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about, I guess, what would be a consistent pattern over many years from family to family, from mother to daughter, and it sounds like you're trying to break out of that pattern.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I started the book with my first sexual experience just because I hear this same story over and over again. When I was brought up, I was told not to have sex, don't do it, bad girls do, good girls don't, you save it for your husband, and that basically I got the feeling that women, as a wife, I'm not supposed to enjoy sex. That it was something that I gave to my husband, and it was expected that my husband would enjoy it, but I would not. And so for many years after I was married, it just wasn't a very positive experience for me. In fact, I would disconnect my mind from my body while sex was taking place. And it took many, many years for me to finally get past those messages that my mom had given me when I was growing up, to get to the point where I could say, hey, I'm an equal part of this relationship. I deserve to have sexual pleasure as well, and this just has to stop. And my feelings about sex, mind you, led to the end of that relationship.
Oh.
Because I just could not enjoy this part of our relationship because of all those negative messages. And it did end in divorce. Mm. And so I just woke up one day and said, enough already of my next relationship. It's not going to be that way, and I deserve to have sexual pleasure. So with my second marriage, I did make that mistake and have a wonderful relationship.
So you decided that that wasn't going to work and you needed to do something different.
Absolutely, because having a satisfying sex life is so important in a marriage. And often when we're in marriages, there are lots of women who feel the same way that I did when I was married the first time, that their job is to please their partners and they're often not happy. I don't know if you've seen the latest data, but it basically shows that 43% of women in America are not happy with their sex life. Well, I believe that because what I see in my practice is that a lot of women really are unhappy with their sex lives, and their unhappiness runs over and affects their relationship with their significant other. And the people who've been married for many, many years begin to have significant problems in the relationship because of their sexual difficulties.
My guest is Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. Her book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. It's been published by Putnam. She joins us by telephone today in the Book Nook. I am one of the great unwashed. I have never seen Sex in the City, but I understand that it's a program where the women seem to have permission to be bad girls. And in your book, you talk about trying to have the confidence to give yourself permission to be a bad girl and celebrate the power of your sexuality.
I think there's a limit to that, though. There is a limit to that. See, in my mind, growing up, having sex at all meant that you were a bad girl.
Uh-huh.
And that you couldn't enjoy it at all if you were a good girl, even after marriage. You know, this was something you gave to your husband. I certainly think there's a limit to being a bad girl. And what we see on television with Sex in the City, some of the programs that you see on MTV, if you have teenagers like I do, those types of bad girls, I think, are bad.
Those are very bad girls.
They're very bad girls.
Okay.
They're still bad girls, and I don't think that any women should behave that way. And what I see in my practice is that I'll have young women come in to me and say, I thought I had a great sex life until I watched Sex in the City, and I'm not having as much sex as Samantha, and I'm not enjoying it as much as Samantha is, so something's wrong with me.
Okay. It's kind of like looking at a magazine and seeing these glamorous models and thinking there's something wrong with you because you don't look like one of them.
Exactly. It's the same principle that we're surrounded by all of these really sensationalized, glamorized images of sex and sexuality, and then begin to think that something is wrong with us when our sex lives don't correspond to those of the characters on the television.
One of my favorite songs in The King and I is Getting to Know You, and I had to chuckle. You start your book off with a chapter called that, but it's a little bit different.
A little different, yes. It's a great title, though, right?
It is. Very, very good. Caught my eye. Basically, you're looking at anatomy. You're trying to help the reader understand both the male and the female anatomy, and it's fairly detailed.
Yes, it is fairly detailed. And the reason for that is, again, after being a gynecologist for 21 years, I've noticed something about women, and that is most of us have been brought up to feel that that part of our bodies is distasteful, ugly, a part that we shouldn't touch, that we shouldn't look at. And women feel very badly about that part of their bodies. And this has just appeared to me over and over and over again, and it doesn't matter the age. I see this in teenagers today. I see it in women in their 70s and all ages in between. And what I wanted to do was to help women see that the total female body is beautiful, and it should be celebrated, and that there's no part of your body that you should be ashamed of or afraid to look at or talk about or touch. And that's why I go into so much detail. I'll see women in my office, and if I offer them a mirror to learn about their bodies, the usual reaction is, I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to look down there. And that's sad, because this is a part of your body, just like your hands and your nose and your mouth. And it should be something that women are proud of. So I go into great detail so that they do understand their bodies and they do come to a point, hopefully, when they find their bodies to be beautiful.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. We're talking about sex on the program today with Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. This recorded back in 2002. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO. Introducing you to your new favorite song. Stay tuned. We've got more sex coming up in the Book Nook right after this. The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO. Going back to 2002, when I interviewed Dr. Hilda Hutcherson for her book, What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex.
In the next chapter, I talk about the male body, because without getting graphic, women tell me that they can't look at or touch their male partners,
mm-hmm.
that they're embarrassed and they don't know much about it. And in my mind, how can you enjoy such an intimate relationship with your partner if you don't feel comfortable with their body? And so I go into a lot of detail about the male body as well. And I think that men who read this chapter will also find out some things that they didn't know about their bodies.
We're products of our culture. At very young ages, we are told things by our parents, and we live with that information the rest of our lives, and it really does influence our experiences, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's those early messages that really are the foundation of how we feel about ourselves in general, how we feel about ourselves sexually, and what kind of a relationship we're going to have in the future with future partners. And when we give our children negative messages about their bodies and negative messages about sex, it makes it very difficult for them to have a healthy and satisfying sex life when they become adults. You know, most parents feel, well, if I don't talk about it, it won't happen. Or they feel, if I make them so afraid of sex, then it won't happen until they get married. But what happens is those messages are ingrained in us so deeply that even after we get married and we're in a wonderful relationship, sometimes we cannot enjoy that most important part of a relationship between a man and a woman, because we still have those negative messages in the back of our brains.
My guest is Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. Her book is called What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. She joins us in the Book Nook today. As I read the book, I reflected on our culture and the way we think about things, and how you can ask a person a question and get a different answer depending upon who you asked. I think if you asked former President Bill Clinton, what is sex, he might have a very different answer than you or I. What's your definition?
Well, I think that sex involves a number of different pleasurable activities, and it's not just intercourse. And that's a message that our young people are not getting, unfortunately. It certainly involves a number of different activities, pretty much anything that involves stimulating the genitals or sexual organs, one would have to consider sex. And the problem today is that young people and middle schoolers are now under the impression, since Bill Clinton's fiasco,
uh-huh.
that activities like oral sex is not sex, and that anything short of intercourse is not sex. And in my practice, I have seen young teens come in with very serious sexually transmitted infections because they didn't know what sex was. And they would say to me, well, I didn't have intercourse, So how could I have a sexually transmitted disease?
Hmm.
And then I would have to explain to them that sex is more than just intercourse. There are a lot of these activities that teens are participating in and thinking that they're safe. And because they can't get pregnant and they can't lose their virginity, then it's okay to do it. It's a big problem. It's a huge problem. And what I have tried to tell my patients, and I go around to the different schools and I talk to young people, that this is something that happens across all socioeconomic lines. Like, I live in a very wealthy community, and mothers will say to me, well, that doesn't happen in this part of the country. Our kids would never do that. And I have to tell them, this happens to all kids. It's something that's very prevalent out there, that people think, or at least young people think, that anything short of intercourse is not sex, and it's safe.
Is that Westchester you're talking about?
I live in Westchester, which mm-hmm. is a wealthy area in the country,
mm-hmm.
and very wealthy in mm-hmm. New York. And I practice on Madison Avenue and 60th Street, Midtown Manhattan, which is another very, very high socioeconomic class group.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the same problems in wealthy kids who go to the best private schools in New York as I do in inner-city kids who come to the clinic at my hospital. It's basically the same. And so we all have to talk to our children about what's appropriate behavior, what's not appropriate behavior. And parents have to be graphic. They have to be graphic when they're talking to their kids. We can no longer beat around the bush and hope that they understand what we mean.
You mean beat around the Clinton? Just kidding.
My
guest is Dr. Hilda Hutchison. The book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. What is an orgasm?
Well, you know, orgasms are really interesting. I have so much to say about orgasms. But basically, when you look at it physically from a doctor's point of view, when you're sexually aroused, you get a lot of tension and blood flow into your pelvic area, male and female. And orgasm is the point at which you reach a pinnacle and that tension is released. And what happens physiologically is that the muscles in your pelvic area will contract, usually 0.8 seconds apart. And the number of those contractions can be anywhere from like 3 contractions to 15 contractions. So basically, the actual orgasm only lasts a few seconds. The feeling that you get of warmth and relaxation and pleasure, of course, can linger after that. But the actual orgasm doesn't last very long.
Hmm.
And in our culture, at least recently, we're putting so much emphasis on orgasm that it's become a goal. And in my book, what I try to tell women, because they often feel so pressured to reach this state, is that you don't have to have an orgasm. At least women don't have to have an orgasm in order to enjoy sex. If you're having a very loving relationship and you find that at the end of your encounter you're feeling warm and love, then why worry about whether you had an orgasm or not? And the other thing I try to tell my patients is that an orgasm is an orgasm is an orgasm, and it doesn't matter how you reach that point. And often we put pressure on ourselves to reach it in one certain way that we think is the right way or the real way.
Mm.
And we watch television, and we watch movies, and we try to emulate those experiences when those experiences, for the most part, are not real.
So love and intimacy are the keys, and not feeling anxiety about the sexual contact is what you should try for, because anxiety really is the opposite of what sex is about, isn't
it? Exactly. So if you're pressuring yourself to reach a goal because you think that that's what you have to do in order to enjoy sex, then you're ruining what can be a really wonderful experience of bonding with someone that you love and you care about. So, and men also need to know this, because quite often women will come to me and say, my husband is pressuring me to have an orgasm, and the more he pressures me, the less of a chance that it's going to happen. I think you're absolutely right. Tell your husband that for women, it's not necessary for us to have an orgasm every time we have sex. We can enjoy it without that. And if you look at the statistics, only 29% of women have orgasm every time they have intercourse. That means that 71% of women don't. So if you don't reach that pinnacle every time you have intercourse, then that's okay. You're normal.
I'm sure we have a lot of listeners going, yay, I'm normal, but I still want to be one of the 29%.
Well, there's certainly things that you can do to increase the chances that it will happen.
Yes, chapter 12, Sexual Enhancers. I remember that chapter. My guest is Hilda Hutcherson, and her book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. You have a whole section here on fantasies, and I was intrigued. You have a list of women's most common fantasies. Now, where did you get this information?
Well, I actually did a research, and I went through every article that's ever been written on fantasies. And I was surprised that there are a lot of articles that have been written on fantasies. They're mostly in the sociology research areas. And I actually learned so much when I did this chapter. It was fascinating for me, because I've had so many women come to my office, and sometimes I feel like I'm the priest at confessional, because my patients know that I'm willing to talk to them about sex, because I will always ask them, and I have for years and years and years, how's your sex life? And they will tell me, I'm feeling guilty because I was having sex with my husband, and I was fantasizing about his best friend. And I feel so guilty. Does that mean that I want to have an affair with his best friend? And I tell them, no, that doesn't necessarily mean that you want to act out your fantasies. Fantasies are actually good things, as long as you don't feel guilty about it. Hmm. It's healthy. It increases your arousal. It increases the chances that you will have pleasurable sex, and it allows you to think of things that you ordinarily would not think of. And so there's no problem in fantasies as long as you are not tempted to act them out.
Well, I must say, Hilda, the section on sexual enhancers goes into quite a bit of depth, and you've got a whole section on sex toys, which we won't really cover on this program.
No, I don't think
herbs.
We can go there.
Herbs was interesting. You have a list of herbs here. I think we can talk about those. I had heard of some of these, but this is very extensive. You list black cohosh, chasteberry, damiana, fenugreek, foti, garlic, ginseng, gotu kola. It's just a whole list. You've really done some work here.
Oh, yeah. I did a lot of research looking at herbs that are used that can help women to improve their sex lives. And these are really good, I find, for women who are perimenopausal or menopausal. When your natural hormones start to decrease and your libido and arousal all start to decrease during that time. And what most of these herbs actually do is to give you an estrogen-like effect to counteract some of those changes in your body. And some of the herbs act to relax women so that they can enjoy a sexual experience. You know, sometimes we get so nervous and anxious about it that it's difficult to relax and just let things happen. So some of these herbs are natural ways of doing that.
I love your list of the very best aphrodisiacs. Hilda has this list, and you zing right in on it because it's highlighted. And you're expecting it to be some really important stuff, and it is, but it's not what you expect. This is the list. She says, the very best aphrodisiacs are a mutually enjoyable and loving relationship, an interesting and interested partner, a healthy diet containing vitamins, minerals, water, and nutrients necessary for optimal health, regular exercise and a healthy body, sexual self-esteem, and a healthy mind. Now, these are aphrodisiacs that I think we all can connect with, yet it's not what I expected.
But those really are the very best aphrodisiacs. I know people are expecting me to come up with some herb, some root, some rhinoceros horn, or whatever that's going to be a magic potion to bring that joy into their sex lives. But when you think about it, these really are the best things that you can do to improve your sex life.
Of course, right before that, you did have the lover's menu.
That's kind of fun.
Salad of wild greens, walnuts, apples, oil, and vinegar, grilled salmon, sautéed zucchini with mushrooms, steamed carrots, and lemon cream sauce, brown rice pilaf with almonds, strawberries dipped in chocolate, and parsley and mint sorbet. I'm getting hungry here.
Well, I think you should go home and you should prepare this for your darling wife. And we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Then you go to part three, taking care of yourself. This is a very important section, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's very important because if you want to have a good sex life, it's important to have a healthy body. If you're running out of steam after 2 minutes because you're out of shape, then you can't possibly expect to have a great sex life. Or if you're happy, your partner's not going to be happy. So exercise, eating well are so, so important to a great sex life.
And you've got all these exercises for women that, well, frankly, I was fascinated by these. You talk about the bicycle, the cobra. These are a lot of very interesting exercises. She has diagrams. She has illustrations. And I'm impressed. I hadn't known about any of this.
Well, these are all to increase the strength, flexibility, endurance of your body so that your muscles move better, that you have the strength and flexibility to get into great positions so sex is not always the same. You know, it becomes pretty boring if it's always the same, and so you want to change it a little bit, spice it up a little bit. So you really have to be in really great shape. And one of the muscles that people often will ignore, and you know, men have the same muscle, this pubococcygeus muscle, which is in the pelvic floor, that supports your bladder and all your organs in your pelvis. And exercising that muscle, especially as you age, is so extremely important. And women, after having children, need to do a lot of these exercises. And you can do the exercises at home, you can do them on the bus, you can do them in the car, because nobody needs to know that you're contracting that muscle. They can't see it. But in addition to that, I also recommend little weights for your pelvic area to help increase the strength of those muscles, which you do in the privacy of your own home. And it's just really important. And it's also important for men, because men who do these type of Kegel-like exercises will find that they can last longer, that they get more arousal, and that their response is stronger. So that's a little known fact.
Wow.
And when you exercise, the other thing that people don't realize is that when you exercise, you increase your testosterone level, men and women. So when I found that out, I got a treadmill. And I put my husband on that treadmill every single day. He goes on the treadmill for an hour.
Oh,
every day.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to an interview I did in 2002 with Dr. Hilda Hutcherson, a gynecologist from Manhattan. And we were talking about her book, What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. It's very interesting hour that I spent with her in 2002, and we'll bring you the final segment of that right after this. You're listening to your public radio station, WYSO. Back in 2002, I had a really good time for an entire hour talking about sex on the radio.
My guest is Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. Her book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. It's just been published by Putnam, and she joins us in the Book Nook today. I got to chapter 17, Of a Certain Age, Mature Sex. What is perimenopause?
Well, perimenopause is composed of those years that are leading up to menopause. And menopause is a time in a woman's life when she stops having menstrual period and she can no longer get pregnant. Before she gets to that point where her menstrual periods completely go away, you can have from 1 year to 10 years of what we call perimenopause. And during that time, what's happening is the ovary is starting to get weak. It's not making as much estrogen as it used to, but still hasn't stopped. And the hormone levels tend to go up and down and up and down. And during this time, women will start to have symptoms, a lot of complaints. Moodiness is one of them, a few hot flashes now and then, a decrease in desire for sex, a decrease in arousal, which sometimes will cause pain when they're having sex. And all of those symptoms can be taken care of. And if a woman is not expecting to get those symptoms, then she often feels that something is terribly, terribly wrong with her.
I grew up in a family where my father smoked, and it was back in the days when smoking really wasn't considered a strange thing. Now people are a lot more conscious of it, to the point where if I see a young person smoking on the street, I've never done this yet, but I'm often tempted to go up to them and say, "What are you doing? Why on earth are you smoking? I know you think you look cool, but there's a price to be paid for that, and you give us some more reasons to stop smoking."
That's right. Well, everybody knows about smoking and cancer, and that often doesn't work with my patients. But when I tell them that that smoking will decrease your arousal, it has even been associated with impotence, early onset of impotence in men, and certainly a decreased arousal in women, which can then lead to painful sexual experiences, that's usually a good incentive to stop smoking.
You also have a great chapter in here called More Than Birds and Bees, talking to your daughter about sex. And you address a lot of the fears that parents and particularly mothers have in talking to their daughters. For instance, fear that talking about sex will lead to sex.
That's probably the most common fear of parents. They fear that if they tell too much, that the kids will want to go out and experiment. Well, there have actually been a number of studies, more than one or two, which have proven just the opposite. And what the studies have shown is that teens who can talk openly and honestly with their parents about sex are less likely to go out and have sex early. And when they do have sex, they're more likely to practice safe sex. So it's just the opposite of what we think. Those kids are healthier in their sexuality, and they make good decisions. Today, it's so extremely important because if you turn on the radio and you listen to the songs that our kids are listening to today, it's just incredible, the lyrics that are played all day long when our kids are listening. They're very sexually graphic. I pulled off the road one day because I was in the car with my kids, and there was a song on the radio that was so sexually explicit that I could not believe what I was hearing. I actually had to pull off the side of the road and talk to my kids about that song. And so your kids are being bombarded with these messages that glorify and sensationalize sex, and that are telling them that if they're not having sex, they're not cool. So if you as a parent are not taking the time to tell your children anything different, to tell your children about your values and what you think is appropriate and inappropriate behavior, then everything that they're learning is from their peers and the radio and the television and the movies. And I don't think that a lot of those messages are ones that we want our children to grow up with.
Oh, sometimes you can hear good stuff on the radio.
Oh, there's some great stuff on the radio.
I'm just kidding, Hilda. My guest is Hilda Hutcherson. Her book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex. Dr. Hutcherson joins us in the Book Nook today by telephone from New York. I thought Chapter 20 was very important. It's called Psychological and Emotional Issues, and you cover a range of them, including depression, body image, stress, childhood physical or sexual abuse, negative childhood messages. Then you get into partner issues, relationship issues. Like, this was really a good section. Lack of tenderness, not enough foreplay, problems with his technique, boredom, unrealistic expectations, performance anxiety. You really covered it all.
I see it all in my practice. Women come to me and they tell me everything. And the lack of tenderness and foreplay is the number one complaint that women have about men. Now, I'm sure men have some complaints about women, but I'm a gynecologist, and this is what I hear on a daily basis. Because women would much prefer to have a lot of tenderness and love and stroking and being held, and to have our men tell us that we're beautiful and we're special and they love us, than the actual physical act of sex. Now, sometimes we won't tell guys that, but that's how we really feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually hear a lot of that in my practice, that women complain that they would like to have more of that tenderness and the emotional aspects of sex rather than the physical aspects of sex. And what I found is that the longer a couple is married, the less time they spend on those little things.
Hilda, you've been quoted as saying that we shouldn't make sex one more disease that needs to be treated. Were you referring to Viagra?
Oh, yes. What has happened is that when Viagra was introduced as a treatment for men and their problems with erection, the company made a lot of money. They made a lot of money. And I think even they were surprised at the success, the financial success of this drug. So immediately, companies started thinking about women. Let's come up with something for women to cure women's problems, because we know that there are a lot of women who don't enjoy sex. And so they've come up with names of disease processes that make women feel very inadequate and treatments for those disease processes. And my only point is that most of the issues that women have surrounding sex have nothing to do with their difficulties in their blood flow or the way their nerves are reacting or any of that medical, physical problems. It has much more to do with the emotional side and whether they're getting that emotional side in their sex lives. I mean, certainly there are medical problems that can affect one's sexuality, and I talk about them in the book, but I'm just very concerned that we don't turn sex for women into a disease that needs to be treated with a magic pill.
I'm old enough to remember the so-called sexual revolution and some of the aftermath of that back when cigarette commercials were still aired on television, and they had an incredibly obnoxious ad that said, "You've come a long way, baby. You've got your own cigarette now, baby. You've come a long, long way." I think you might know which commercial I'm referring to.
Oh, yes, I do.
Despite sexual liberation, despite the turbulence of the 60s and 70s, and a feeling that we're much better informed now and much more open, we really haven't come that far, have we?
Yeah, and it's so surprising, but we really haven't come that far. Sex is really still a taboo subject when you're talking about it honestly and openly. I mean, we can joke about it on television. We can show unrealistic images on television. But when it comes to talking about it realistically, it's a huge problem, and we still just don't feel comfortable with it.
I understand that you have appeared on Oprah, Geraldo, and Montel. What was that like?
Oh, I've had so much fun. And all of those programs, of course, were very, very different in their approach and their subject matter. But I like educating women. And each time that I appeared on either one of those shows, it was always of an educational nature. You know, even the Geraldo, when on the Geraldo show, all my colleagues were saying, "You've got to be kidding." But the times that I did go on Geraldo's show, he was educating women about their bodies and how to examine their bodies and how to examine their male partners' bodies. And therefore, it was just a lot of fun for me and something that made me feel that I was contributing to the education of women, which is very important to me.
I have powerful memories of being a teenager and not really feeling like I could ask my parents questions about sex. In fact, there's a period there that I experienced, which I don't think is that uncommon, where you didn't really feel like you could ask your parents about anything. You didn't feel like they understood you. I've never had any children, but I know there's a lot of folks out there listening who do have children, possibly teenagers. How do we be more askable parents? How do we keep that communication channel open?
Oh, absolutely. And if there's anyone who's listening who has teenagers and you haven't started that conversation, it's never too late. I mean, it's always best if you can start very early on with your kids, starting from like age 2 and gradually adding on to the information every year throughout their lifespans until they become adults and move away. But if you have teens and you haven't taken the time, it's not too late to do that. And often, you know, we don't feel comfortable because our parents didn't talk to us and we don't really know what to say. And so I say to them, get a book, learn as much as you can about sex and sexuality, and then you can share that information with your teenager either by reading the book together or just using the music that they're listening to or television program that they're listening to as a teachable moment, as an opportunity to broach the subject of sex. And you'll actually be pretty surprised, I think. Most parents are surprised at how open their teens will be with the subject matter once they see that you're open to talking about it. Now, some teens will pretend that they know everything and they don't want to hear it, and you will think that they're just not paying attention. And you have to just say, okay, I have to do this. Okay, humor me a little bit. Listen to what I have to say. And you'd be surprised at how much is actually being listened to and retained by that teen and will make a difference in how they behave in the future. So you just never give up. It has to be a continuing talking.
And every day we fight the battle of trying to be realistic because even if you're living in a fantasy world, you've got to be realistic. And I can remember many years ago my mother discovering one of my brother's collection of Playboys, and she lectured to him, "These women are not normal. You're never going to meet a woman like this." And I know another guy who got so fixated on the women that he saw in Playboy that he spent the rest of his life trying to find one. He's not having any luck from the last I heard.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think your mom was right. And that's a problem with young men in this country when they do get their first introduction to women through magazines like Playboy, where they are airbrushed and perfect.
Uh-huh.
And it's a rude awakening when they find that women really don't look like that.
Yeah, where's my airbrush?
Exactly. Yeah. I would like to have one, too.
Good point, Hilda. I like to airbrush the whole guy. No. Hilda, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners here in Southwest Ohio?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing is that women start to feel good about themselves and really get to know themselves and what makes them happy, and then to feel empowered and deserving enough to share that information with their partners. It really is about communication. And men really do want to make their ladies happy if they love them. And so we ladies have to feel comfortable going to them and not complaining, but just making nice little suggestions about how things can be done to make you happy.
Mm.
And that's the key.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. This was fun.
Good. My guest has been Dr. Hilda Hutcherson. The book is What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex, just published by Putnam.
And we've been talking about sex on the radio for the last hour, going back to 2002, an interview I did with Dr. Hilda Hutcherson, a gynecologist in Manhattan. And her book, What Your Mother Never Told You About Sex, was a bestseller. And she did all the talk shows, and she did our program, The Book Nook, back in 2002. Her only appearance here, and I had her on the phone. She was in Manhattan, and I used to do this show live every weekday afternoon, and I was talking to her, and at the end of the interview there, when I said it was just published by Putnam, I went on to say, can you just hold the phone? And then I heard click, dial tone. She hung up on me. But we still had a really great hour together and really enjoyed that interview, and I hope you did too. The Book Nook comes your way every Saturday morning at 7 o'clock and every Sunday morning at 10:30. And tomorrow, I'll bring you one of the hottest books in the country as Don Winslow returns to the program. And this was unexpected because several years ago, Don told us he retired. He wasn't going to put out any more books. He was going to focus on politics because he's a very outspoken guy on politics and what is going on in our country these days. And so he was going to focus on that. And then apparently he changed his mind. He's got this new book out called The Final Score. It's a collection of stories, but these are all really long stories, so it's more like a collection of novellas. And it's a really hot book right now. It's a bestseller. It just came out this week, and he was looking forward to going out on book tour, and I knew it was going to be a hot book, so I tracked him down on January 5th before he got too busy to record this interview that I'm going to have for you tomorrow. And he was very relaxed. He was at home in California. And a lot has changed since then. During the interview, I talked to Don about his politics, about his political views, about his outspokenness. He's very active on Twitter, and he posts films on there that he pays to produce. He doesn't accept any donations. He spends his own money on these films, and he was going to have a new one come out this week, and he began to get all kinds of threats. Online threats, to the point where it got so bad that he canceled his book tour. He would have been out this week on book tour. And he and his family left their home and have moved to an undisclosed location because of these really scary threats he's been getting online. Unbelievable. He's been very outspoken about the activities of ICE. He's been very outspoken about our current administration, and he's a fearless guy. He apparently won't be intimidated. They said, don't put out this new film. It's about a 5-minute long film. Don't put it out, or we're going to come get you, Don. Well, he put it out this week. If you go on Twitter and look up Don Winslow, you can watch the film and see what you think. He's comparing the way things used to be in the United States with our government and the way things are now. And it's a very powerful film. Regardless of your viewpoints politically, I think it's worth watching just to see what he had to say and what he believes and what has caused him to be under threat. Really kind of sickening. This poor guy had to cancel his book tour and leave his own home because of these threats. And they're scary. If you go on Twitter, he posts the threats on there just to show you the kind of stuff he's dealing with. And he's a very busy guy. I was so glad to track him down on January 5th to record the interview because if I tried now, I'm sure I could not get him to do an interview due to what's going on in his life. So that's coming on tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning as we bring you the Book Nook on Sunday. And Don, if you're out there listening, I'm sure you're not, be safe because this is crazy. The Final Score is his new book, and we'll be talking to Don about that tomorrow morning right here in the Book Nook at 10:30. And I've had Don on the program a half dozen times. And during the interview, he talked about all the activity in Hollywood. There's actually a story in this new collection that's already being developed as a movie before the book even came out. They had already optioned it. He's got another one that just came out this week, another movie based on one of his stories. That's coming up in the Book Nook tomorrow morning at 10:30. Thanks for listening to WYSO.